thought in the interest of trying to get some type of a survey a little bit, of a sampling, so we have an extra 2 days that we didn't expect to have.
What daf?
So I'm looking at that vav at the moment, I think, to get maybe a little bit of sampling of some of the more, some of the other gemaras that we didn't get a chance to see. So just to say a few words about some of the traditional gemaras. So let's say that last gemara we looked at was actually Daf Hey Amar Aleph. So maybe we'll mention also how are you going? An important gemara on the bottom of the Vav in the days. We'll mention that one. It's a gemara that's not fully appreciated for its importance. The gemara on the Vav in the days, in the bottom, the gemara says, Amar of Chelbu, Amar of Huna, Kol Sheodea Bechavero, Shehu Rogel Litem El Shalom, anyone who knows about his friend that he is in the habit of saying Shalom to him first, Yakdim El Shalom. So he should give that person shalom himself first. He should be the first to express shalom. Shenamar bakei shalom v'rafeyu. Because the pasuk says in Tehillim that a person should seek out shalom and chase after it. V'yam nosam lo v'lo hichzir nikra gazlan. And if the other person gave him and he did not respond, so then he's called a gazlan. Shenamar, the pasuk says, Yatem bi'artu v'karev gazalta ha'ani b'vateichem. You have robbed the ani. So how do you rob an ani? As Rashi raises the question, presumably an ani doesn't have what to rob. So as Rashi explains, that Ela Shalaheshiv al Shlomo, that you didn't respond to his, you didn't respond to his greeting, that's a type of gizela. So this is,
so he says, so this would mean that Rashi is saying that since you have nothing else to steal from an ani but that, mm-hmm. So if you didn't return his shalom by an ani you've stolen, but by an ashir, are you also considered a thief?
Yes, absolutely. What Rashi is addressing is that if the pasuk says you can steal from an ani, so how can you steal from an ani if he doesn't have what to steal? So it must be that the shalom is considered to be a theft. So therefore, by a rich person, it's also considered to be a theft, because a rich person has that asset also, theoretically. It's just that that's the only thing the ani has, so that's what the pasuk presumably means. So that basically tells us two dinim. The Gemara might be a little more famous later on. And the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan was makdim shalom l'chol adam afilu nachri shibashuk, that he would say he would offer shalom first to everyone who he saw. So there it's considered to be a maila. Apparently this hakdama shalom is considered to be a Yisra'ah. I think the Rambam puts it at Midas Talmidei Chachamim, and that's a quality of Torah scholars to do that. And what emerges from this Gemara is that there's essentially two categories. There is that Midas Talmidei Chachamim to be the first one, and then there's also an Isser, so to speak, to not return Shalom. So for you to be the first one in there, that's a Maila, and to fail to return it, that's a problem. So the Maharsha says, maybe that's why the Gemara says that whoever knows that somebody is rugil, that if you know that the person who you're dealing with is somebody who is habituated to return to you, then you have to be makim shalom. So why only such a person? We should have to be makim shalom to everyone, like Rabbi Yochanan. So he suggests, there's a discussion about this in some of the latest svarim, that maybe we're worried about being machshalim. That if we know that there's an issur of not returning shalom, so maybe we're worried that if you're going to approach somebody in the street who doesn't know who you are, that he's not going to return it. It's not so clear that that's such a concern. But later, post-game, we're not so worried about that. But there is a way, so you're putting everybody in competition with each other. So presumably, They say that every two people who meet each other, it's only one person can win this game, so to speak. Only one person can get the extra mile of being maxed in Shalom. So that's not necessarily true. There is a Indian which the Mari Bruna discusses in his Tshuvas, that maybe you also get the quality of being maxed in Shalom if you ramp it up a notch, if you up the ante. When a person greets you, you say a little bit more, so he gets the Hakdama Shalom because he went first, and you get the element of Hakdama Shalom by increasing it. Which, I don't know if Rabbi Bruner makes this connection, but I remember when I took Yiddish in Yeshiva University, so we learned that that's the Derech in Yiddish, that when somebody greets you, so the response is always more expansive. So they say to you, you know, good evening, good novent. And if you respond, good novent, good year, you should have a good evening and a good year. So what does that guy do with anything? Why a good year all of a sudden? So it could be that this reflects this idea, this Jewish minhag, that the person responding says a little bit more than the person who spoke, because he's got to play catch up. The first guy gets the maila of Hakdama Shalom, and the one responding can obtain that maila by expanding a little bit more. And that it's interesting also, just while we're talking about the quirks of how Jews greet each other, so we know also that there is a element that when I see somebody else who say Shalom Aleichem, and they respond back Aleichem Shalom, so it also sounds like a game, so you just reverse what the previous guy said. How come it's backwards? So the simple answer is it's a grammatical issue. You know, the first person says, peace on you, and you respond, no, on you, peace. It's a way of shifting the emphasis a little bit. But there are some more creative answers, which you also find in some of the earliest forums. So some say it's based on this, because let's say I were to see Dr. Belazon this morning, so I'd come in and I'd say, Shalom Aleichem. And then somebody else would walk into the room right after that, and they'd hear Dr. Belazon say to me, Shalom Aleichem. So all they would know from what they saw is that he says to me, Shalom Aleichem, and I don't say anything back, and they'll think it's gefilah, they'll be choshed me that I'm not returning Shalom. So if we have a different nusach for the return, for the original expression, so then when the person walks in the middle, and he hears Aleichem Shalom, so he'll recognize what went on, he'll recognize that I just said Shalom Aleichem a second ago, and he's responding, and therefore neither of us are guilty of not returning Shalom. So some suggest that that's why there's a different nusach for the one speaking first and the one speaking second. Hi.
Just as a parenthetical, why do we say it in
the
plural, even if
there's
only one first
person saying it? It's a respectful reference. It's, in Yiddish, you know, when you want to be more respectful in some of the European languages, you speak in plural, in French. So there is another, perhaps even more creative answer, that the chef has mentioned on occasion. This is all put in other stars. Is a sefer. I think it's at least two entire svarim on Kehilat Shalom. The sefer called Amira Shalom Kehilchaso. I think there's another sefer that came out more recently. A lot written about these topics. So there are those who suggest that the issue of Aleichem Shalom is that the Gemara, the beginning in the Darim, on the first daf in the Darim. So the Gemara says that they made a takana that when somebody is making a korban, so they should say Karbon Lashem, somebody making a neder for a karbon, somebody is dedicating something for karbon, so they should say Karbon Lashem instead of Lashem Karbon. Why? Because they're worried that if you mention Hashem's name first, so that maybe the person will die right after that before finishing the sentence, and it will be Hashem Shemayim Uvatala, and it will be mentioning God's name for no reason. So therefore, if they put God's name at the end of the sentence, so then that will stop that from happening. So therefore, we say Aleichem Shalom, because Shalom is considered to be Hashem Hashem. That's the Gemara Masechta Shabbos on Daf Yud. So therefore, if you put the Shalom at the end, so you solve that problem. But then you'll say, well, wait a minute, what about the first guy? Right, so the first guy, how come he gets to say Shalom Aleichem? So the point is, as Rav Shechta commented once, that the Chazal say that Hamakim Shalom L'Chaveru is the school of Arichas Yomim, the person that goes first. So it's a school that will have a long life. So Mustama, we're confident to at least finish the phrase. At least be able to say Shalom Aleichem. It's a big expression of confidence. The person that goes first, that we have enough for faith that he'll be able to survive the expression, we let him say it like that.
Provided that he's not old already.
Well, even if he's old, if there's a school that just will hopefully allow him to...
Remember, I used to say that it's only to show that we never agree with each other.
Yes, that's the fourth reason. So any one of these reasons could be real, and they're probably all true. So that's an important idea. So this is an important issue, basically, not to violate this issue, so to speak. And that's why, you know, if we got up to the second parak, so maybe someday we'll do that. So you see, the beginning of the second parak, so there's a whole list of what the rules are in the middle of Kriya Shema. So a person is permitted to respond to certain greetings. Sometimes he's permitted to initiate certain greetings. It depends. The whole discussion over there, that at different, you can make a chart, different points in Kriya Shema, and different motivations. If you're talking to somebody who evokes Yira, or who evokes Kavod, or maybe none of those things, depending on which opinion you're talking about, and what stage in the davening, what stage in the Kriya Shema specifically, you're either allowed to initiate a greeting to somebody, or you're allowed to respond. So we see, first of all, that responding has a lower threshold of letting somebody in, because that's got that concern of not violating the sister. That if it's considered to be some type of exela, so then we're more concerned about that. So we have this lower threshold. And as far as I'm saying, this is all a function of Kavod Abrios and of Shalom in general, that the assumption is that properly honoring people and keeping a peaceful atmosphere requires you to greet them. There are some who say, I believe the Menorah Samar says, the Pasuk here says, Yati Makim Shalom, the Gemara says, because the Pasuk tells us, Baki Shalom V'Rashehu. So there are those who maintain that is a mitzvah asay mitzvah kabbalah. But that has the status of a mitzvah, not from the Torah itself, not Chumash, apostolic, but it's in Tehillim. So maybe there is such an idea that has a status like a mitzvah mitzvah kabbalah. Mitzvah mitzvah kabbalah, meaning a mitzvah that's not mentioned in Chumash, but is mentioned in Nach. The Turiyevim thought that also the Shargis Ayu is of the opinion that has the status of a mitzvah deraisa, because there is a Gemara Maseches Rosh Hashanah and Daf Yud Ches, where the Gemara says that Divrei Kabbalah ki Divrei Torah dami. Divrei Kabbalah compared to Divrei Torah, Divrei Kabbalah again meaning things that are expressed in Nach. So that really is a very limited context there, but the Torah Yevon asserted that means for all purposes. Suffolk, Lechumra, etc., everything that we apply, everything that we distinguish between a Daraisa and a Darabonim. So if it's in a Pasuk anywhere, we treat it like a Daraisa. So there's two disputes you could raise here. One is that it sounds like a lot of Rishonim didn't agree with that. If you look at some earlier writings, they didn't seem to be assuming that a Divrei Kabbalah is treated like a Divrei Torah, but the Torah Yevon was very influential. So ever since he said that, it's been a often quoted, if not completely accepted, opinion, which is why some of the poskim, for example, when you talk about Hilchos Purim, so you find that they're machmir, or like all of Hilchos Purim or Daraisas, even though it's clearly very post Pentateuchal, but they're mentioned in Megillas Esther, so they're treated like Daraisa. So some would suggest that would be true here also. Bakei Shalom V'Rafayu is also a mitzvah sefer midivrei Kabbalah. Even though there's also room to argue that maybe you only find mitzvah tevedevei Kabbalah in Nevi'im, not in Ksuvim. So Tehillim would be in Ksuvim. It's a whole discussion what the difference is between Nevi'im and Ksuvim. But if you accept that there is such a concept, and that it extends to Ksuvim as well, so then you find some of the Rishonim, as Menorah Samar and others, who suggest that Bakei Shalom V'Rafayu constitutes a mitzvah tevedevei Kabbalah. So what mitzvah tevedevei is it? So in some Sfarim you see it's a mitzvah of peacemaking in general, should seek out peace. And it sounds like the Mitzvah is a little bit different than the Mitzvah of Shaila Shalom, of expressing Shalom. The Shachter has in the Sefer in Pnimei Harav a fascinating idea that the source for the Mishnah in the second parak that says that we're mafsik for Shaila Shalom, that comes from Avraham Avinu. That Avraham Avinu, we know, interrupted his meeting with the Kadosh Baruch Hu in order to greet Malachim, who we thought were human beings. And the Gemara just says over there about that, Gemara in Shabbos, and Daf Kuf Chazayin, that it is gedol hakbalas gedol hachnasas orchem yosem hakbalas pnei shchina, that it's greater to receive death than it is to continue receiving the divine presence that Avram was doing. That's a whole discussion of what exactly that implies and what exactly the effect of that statement is. But some connect that to the idea that there is a notion of prioritizing bin adam l'chaveru as even the middle of a bin adam l'makom, and Shechter suggests that the makor for this is from Avraham Avinu, and that that's the halacha reflected in the Mishnah about Kriyashma. That when the Mishnah says that you interrupt your Kriyashma in order to greet someone, that that's derived from Avraham Avinu, and that it's contrasted with Shmon Esrei. When it comes to Shmon Esrei, they don't really let you interrupt for anything unless it's Pikuach Nefesh. They don't let you stop. And that he suggests there's two different motifs there. That sometimes we emphasize the greatness of man in Kavod HaBrius, the human dignity is a tremendous thing that even a Kadosh Baruch Hu is willing to step aside, and sometimes we emphasize the fact that humanity is nothing in God's presence, and that we push that end of the equation, which is represented by the Hasidic story about the Rabbi who had statement in each pocket. In one pocket he has Anochi Ofer, I'm just dust, and the other pasuk he has Bishlilim Ve'olam. So we're always balancing the fact that the world is created for humanity, and on the other hand humanity is nothing in front of God. So he suggested that Shema represents the time when we emphasize Kavod HaBrios, so therefore we'll interrupt even for greeting someone, while Shmon Esrei is the other side of the equation. We emphasize how man is nothing in front of God.
So there's a Shema Kavod HaBrios.
The fact that you will interrupt it for the sake of greeting somebody, so that reflects that idea that's derived from Avraham Avinu, that Avraham Avinu interrupted his
anti-Shema.
Correct. That is basically the idea that even within Shema, we allow the humanity to have that type of priority. Fascinating idea. I don't know if anyone else has that approach to that figure, but Shechter quotes that from the Rav in Mishnei Harav.
But that's provided that when you say to somebody Shalom Aleichem, you really just not only said it and got go away, it's committing. You have to carry it further.
Right.
And that's the total gestalt of that.
You're saying that you can't just say good morning to them and then treat them terribly the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Right. And that's also a point that Rosh Hashanah makes, that the mucker for Kavod HaBrios in general, so you know, is from the idea that that a mace mitzvah is Docha Tumah. That a Kohen, a Kohen Gadol is going to take care of a mace mitzvah, the covet of a person, even if it has to involve Tumah. And he points out that people have a mentality sometimes that there's a concept of Kavod HaMeis. So Kavod HaMeis means that you can treat a person terribly his whole life, and then when he dies, all of a sudden, no, Kavod HaMeis, you have to be very careful about how we treat them. Exactly. So it has to be the Pazda Drash in the beginning of Amor, so it works out that after most Kedosh and Amor, so the beginning of Amor is where you have the idea that there is this concept of Kavod HaBrios. So it's clearly a misapplication that the Chiddush of that din is that even after the person is no longer alive to appreciate what you're doing for them, there's still a din of Kavod. So it's not that the Kavod begins after they die, it's that the Kavod that extends when they're alive still extends till after they're no longer alive. That's what Kavod HaMeis comes to tell you. So that's an important din, which this may be a reflection of. The Mishnah Berurah also writes that this whole idea of Hakdamas Shalom is an aspect of Kavod HaBrios. The Rav Osner has an interesting side topic which connects to this Gemara also, that there is, especially if you ever go to summer camp, so you know that there's apparently an Issa D'Raisa of Gezel Shena. And if you wake up somebody in the middle of the night, so that is, or have a right to be sleeping, so that's an Issa D'Raisa, as the counselors always will emphasize, of Gezel Shena. So where do the counselors get it from? Where does it say in the Torah that there's an Issa of of waking somebody up? So that's a good question. So the Karen Ladavid, the Shiva's Karen Ladavid in Siman Yuchetz, says that the mucker is, it's a didn't know us devara. We have a prohibition to cause somebody aggravation, to cause somebody irritation. So if you wake them up, that's a very great discomfort to somebody. That's a violation of that prohibition. Zalman Chaim Goldberg has a short article somewhere where he says it's basically a monetary issue, that the person is presumably going to have reduced functioning the next day and reduced ability to earn a living because you interrupted their sleep. So it's essentially a type of financial loss that's being caused. Now it's a grama, it's not a direct financial loss, not a direct nezek. So okay, so you can't come to Beis Din and sue for it, but that means that it's still usher to do. You can't recover damages, but it's still prohibited for somebody to do that to you, and you still have the ability to have an injunction against somebody. You can still stop somebody from continuing to do that.
That's
a good
work the next day.
So that's you think should be mutter to be gogol somebody shayin on Erev Shabbos. It's a pretty radical chiddush.
But even the spiritual now, one of the items is gzeira shena mikenetan shavah.
Yes, you can't pay it back. That's basically the thing. But when you say in general, any type of causative gzeira, any type of causative hezek, so to speak, if I indirectly cause you to lose money, so we know grama b'nezikin is pater. So yeah, pater, what does pater mean? It means that I can't recover the damages. I can't take you to business and say, okay, you caused me to lose $100, you owe me $100. But it's still usser. I'm still not allowed to do that to somebody. And that person, which may be the idea of hezek ria, you know, the idea that you can stop somebody from infringing on your privacy, that may also stem from this idea that you're allowed to A, usher to do it, and B, because usher to do it, so the other person sometimes has the ability to stop you from doing it. He can't charge you afterwards, but he can stop you from doing it, which may also be, as the Chafetz Chaim may understand, may also be the gedder of Lashon Hara. The Lashon Hara also maybe is a causative nezek, that you cause somebody to lose business, let's say, because you speak badly about them. So again, they may not be able to recover damages, but it's still a prohibition. So it's a whole discussion what the source of the Gezel Shena is. So Rav Osner has a tshuva where he talks about this, and he says, you know, this language is Gezel, is it really shyish to talk about Gezel when it comes to an intangible idea? You're not taking anything that's actually physical. So in the context of a tshuva about that, he says somebody mentioned then that maybe this Gemara is a mucker for that, the idea that you steal somebody's greeting, and that the Gemara calls that gzeila, and that we take that somewhat seriously. Maybe this Gemara is a mucker, which could be applied to Gezel Shena also, that that's also a type of Gezel. You could in theory have said maybe this is going to write out that way, because it could have been the answer to the question, what could you steal from the Ani if he doesn't have any money? You could steal his sleep. So the Gemara seems to be assuming there's nothing else you can steal from the Ani. So one could have argued maybe that this could be a mucker that waking him up is not called Gzeila. Okay. It's an interesting idea. So maybe we'll mention also this Gemara here on Dav Zayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara here has an interesting discussion which we'll introduce with the following story. That they say in some Svarim, they relate a story that I believe the Avnei Nezer and the author of the Sefer Nefesh Chaya and Reb Shul Mikutna all met one day, and they related that there's a tradition from the Baal Shem Tov that there's a Tosus in Maseches Brachos which says that if a person is trying to daven and it's almost Osman Tfila, so he doesn't have to finish the tefillah by the end of Sosman Tefillah. He only has to start it. That Sosman Tefillah means you have to start before the Zman, not that you have to finish before the Zman. And supposedly the Tosfos of Bracha somewhere it says that. So they didn't know where this Tosfos was. They knew this part of the story, but they didn't know where the Tosfos was. So I think it was the Avinezer who piped up because he knows where the Tosfos is, the Tosfos of Bracha on Dev Zion. Where does the Tosfos say that? Because the Gemara here has a story that the Gemara tells us about Bilam. This is the longer lines here in Zayin Amud Aleph, that we're lucky that in the days of Bilam, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu never got angry at the Jewish people. That normally God gets angry a little bit every day. Kel Zoim B'chol Yom, that God gets angry every day. And how long is that? It's a very short period of getting angry. The Gemara says it's a rega.
It's a
moment, right. So what's a rega? A rega is either a rega kememra, it's as long as it takes to say that, or it's a very small fraction of an hour. Very, very short period of time. And Bilam was able to figure out when that period was. That was his, the Gemara says, that Yodea Das Elyon, that Bilam knew God's mind, so to speak. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? And he didn't even know his donkey's mind. So he's saying that Bilam couldn't negotiate with his donkey, but he knew God's mind. So the Gemara says, doesn't really mean he knows God's mind. There was one specific point that he was able to figure out, that he could know when this entree into God's anger is, when this moment of God's anger takes place every day. He could figure it out when it was, and that was when he was going to curse the Jewish people. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu did us a favor, that during that time, he didn't get angry, and therefore Bilam wasn't able to do his damage. Okay, that's what the Gemara says. So Tosus, the top Tosus over here, and Diamond Aleph asks an important question. So Malik asked that God says, had I gotten angry during those days, lo nishtayer, there wouldn't be any remnants of the Jewish people. So says Tosus, Yun Tomer, Mahay Yachal Omar B'Shas Rega. How much could he have said? It's a very short period of time. You know, if you have to curse the Jews during that time, how much could he get in? So Tosus has two answers. Yesh Lomar Kalein, he could have just said, sorry, very quickly, and it was been able to be done in that time. Maybe that's what's going on. Or Inami, maybe another answer is Me'achashayam Masil Klalasa Ba'osa Shah, that if he would have started his klala during that time, Hayamazik Afil Acha came down, it would have an effect even later, even if it took him longer to say than that one moment. So since we have a principle that Mida Tova Maruba Mamida Puranis, that the quality, the measurement of something that's good is even more powerful measure for measure than something that's bad. So if this works for a klala, you can assume kavachomer works for a tefillah also. If you get tefillah in under the wire, then it's going to have an impact. So Minchas Yitzchak has a tshuva about this, where he says he thinks it's against the Shulchan Aruch. He doesn't think that this is true b'halacha. He says maybe it's true about a minyan, that if you want to be considered davening with a minyan, so if you get in right before they finish, and it even takes you longer, that's considered to be davening with a minyan. But as far as Montfilo, he doesn't think that it works. I think the Chazon Ish had such an idea in terms of minyan. The Rebbe Sefayim has a show where he talks about that. The Chazon Ish thought that minyan was like a train, that as long as you get in the last car, so you're there, and then somebody can still keep building it on the last part of minyan. So if you come to minyan and the last guy is still davening, you jump in with him, so you're considered to be davening with a minyan. And as Chassid Zichok says, maybe for that purpose it's true, but in terms of Sos Matzila, he doesn't think that it's correct. But somebody showed me once that Aruch HaShulchan seems to accept this far, which again I don't think it's necessarily such a mainstream idea. I think we tend to assume that you have to finish davening by this Matzila, but that's a pretty big vote of confidence that the Aruch HaShulchan does have it. I mean, from this closest that there is such an idea. Okay, that's
davening with a minion, considered davening with a minion. If you say a davar kedusha, like you answer to Baruch Hu, you need the minion. You answer to Kaddish, you need the minion. But let's say you come and tell him of davening, it's all gone. So are you still considered?
So there's two different aspects, at least, of davening with a minion. So answering the dvarim shebekedusha is a big one. But separate from that, there's also an idea of tefillah b'tzibur, that if you want that your davening should have the maila of davening together with the congregation. So that even if you're not actually answering anything, which is a separate maila.
So you come in when they say the yom at the end.
The yom, presumably, right, so the yom is presumably already outside the kinds of tefillah. But I think his point is just that it's not necessarily about answering. Answering Dvarim Shebekedusha is a separate idea. It's also a maila. Right? They have the minyan itself needs a minyan in order to be able to say them. So they'll have that without you. Let's say you're not one of the top ten. So they'll have the minyan without you in order to be able to say Dvarim Shebekedusha. Now, ideally, you want to be able to answer Dvarim Shebekedusha also. That's also a maila. But even separate from that, just you want that your tefillah should be considered tefillah b'tzibur for all the milos that Chazal say that the Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't reject it, etc., etc. So it could be that maybe if you get it under the wire of the last guy, that's considered to be a tefillah b'tzibur. So that's what the Chavanish said about the train mushel. So Mechas Yitzchak was willing to accept that for this idea that you start before it's over, you're starting. Basically, for Zman Tefillah, doesn't think that makes sense. But again, Rav Hashul said that's a pretty big voice if that's the case.
What do you do if you daven long?
Mm-hmm.
And you know that if you will start with the tzibur, which is the highly recommended, you will finish much later, and you will miss the end of Zman Tefillah.
But what's the other choice? You're saying if you
start earlier.
But you definitely start earlier. Start your shemester before the...
Right before the tzibur.
Right, so it would sound like if you accepted this idea, so then you start your flying. But if you assume that probably the conventional psak is like that before, so then if you're not going to finish before Zman Tefillah, which means you're really starting in a very precise time, in theory, a Shaiva could come up, then presumably you should try to start earlier, and then you'll have the end of your shemester together with the tzibur. We tend to... assume that again, it certainly works in the reverse of the Chazanish. You know, we recommend to try to start at the same time when possible, but presumably it would work the other direction as well. Even though there are other problems, so ideally you won't have such a precise time frame where you're going to actually always davening those exact minutes right before the end of the Zman, but that presumably would make sense. Okay, so we'll be back everyone Friday morning and we'll find another topic.
You'll be back Friday morning.
I will. Yeah, that's our new website.
God willing.
Okay, so have a wonderful 47 hours.